but like some of that early mm-hmm. hot water stuff was not my, how about this pun, cup of tea, you know, I don't know, but I just thought of that right now. I didn't, but I remember like,
you know what really makes us mad is wasting money on CDs with only one or two good songs.
Yeah. Talk about punk.
What's up, posers? Welcome to Punk Lotto Pod, the game where no one wins. I'm your co-host, Justin Hensley.
And I am your other co-host, Dylan Hensley.
And this is the show where, using a number generator and the Rate Your Music Punk charts, we choose one album and one EP at random to discuss. Joining us today is the host of the podcast, Where the Living Room Used to Be. We have James Toomey online with us. James, how are you today?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for doing the show. Why don't you tell everyone about your podcast and maybe any musical projects you've been involved with, and just to give a little background on yourself?
Sure. Yeah. So the podcast is, like you just said, Where the Living Room Used to Be. I don't know where your listeners are, but Rhode Island is kind of has this saying or like this trend of telling people when you're looking for directions where things used to be, you know? So mm-hmm. I am not a native of Rhode Island. I've been here for a long time. But it was just one of the things that I picked up on when I, you know, asked for something. People were like, oh, just go down to, you know, where this used to be. And I'm like, I'm not from here, so I don't know where things used to be. But yeah, and the living room is this legendary club. So when I was coming up with the idea of this podcast, I just thought it was a, you know, fun way to encapsulate that. And then I've also learned a bunch of different interpretations from, you know, a record store down here called Olympic Records in Providence. When I went to go hang up some flyers, they're like, oh yeah, I heard about that podcast, you know, that's about like when you have so many records that you don't have a living room anymore. And I was like, no, it's about this other thing. But it's kind of cool how it's taken on its own versions. But yeah, the podcast is about the Rhode Island music scene. So I've been on the board of the Rhode Island Music Hall of Fame since it started about 7-8 years ago. And kind of from that, I've just learned a tremendous amount of Rhode Island's music history, you know, dating back to like the 1800s with, you know, the first person that had like printed music in America was this guy, Oliver Shaw, and, you know, to opera and R&B and blues and country and all this stuff that's come out of here that's, you know, won Grammys and you know, has its place in music history. But, you know, from that, I've also learned that I just have a lot more to learn. And, you know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, and I just thought it was a way to get that message out. Like, it was a way that people could kind of consume these stories. So it covers all genres of music, you know, for people that might be listening to this podcast. You know, you guys and I have a mutual podcast guest, Paul Ticcio.
Yeah.
He's a good friend of mine, like lives down the street, but he runs Tor Johnson Records and has been in Best Practices and a bunch of other bands. But, you know, did an interview with him about the start of the label and how Squid Amps, which was this like DIY space here, like how that began, and just the punk and hardcore scene in Providence. Next month, be putting out an interview that I did with Chris Carrera, who was the guitarist in Weak Teeth and also played in Blood Pheasant and was in a band called Deleted Arrows, which is this amazing band that started with Daryl and Brent from Cancer Conspiracy, and for a period of time also had Zach from Verse in it. So it's like this crazy super group that was from Providence. But yeah, Chris played in that. So we talk about all of his musical projects. But yeah, you know, I've done interviews with the Rhode Island Bluegrass Association president and Allison Callery, who's this, you know, pretty well-known folk artist from here that does really well in Europe. And, you know, I just did the latest one is with John Allmark, who has played with people such as like Frank Sinatra and Joan Rivers and Aretha Franklin and all these like crazy iconic people. Wow. He was a trumpet player. He's like this just virtuoso trumpet player that, you know, still plays constantly here. But, you know, he just talks about that story of coming here. He's from England originally, but came to Rhode Island and, you know, started playing in big bands and, you know, was part of this lineage of the longest jazz night in America. They ran, I mean, it's still running now, but it started in 1967. And he's kind of part of that lineage that is here in Rhode Island. So probably not a lot of people know about all those different things from this tiny state. but yeah, I mean, it's been super fun to do that. You know, I've, you know, personally, I've learned a lot. And then, you know, in addition to the full pod, like interviews, I've just been doing some like shorter bonus pods that have been fun. So like just sharing kind of music advice. And then I don't know if anyone of you that listens to this would kind of get some of the idiosyncrasies of Rhode Islanders, but they have like, they're well known for special types of pizza and certain kind of drinks, you know, like Dale's lemonade and coffee milk and stuff like that. So we kind of just do like a quick lightning round type thing called RI5 of like, you know, favorite record store and, you know, stuff like that. So, but yeah, you know, the, how I got into the, like being a board member of the Rhode Island Music Hall of Fame was I have been playing in bands since I was 14. And, you know, when I was in high school, I was like more successful than I probably should have been. Just kind of got some good breaks and was sort of, I guess, playing in kind of like a Rage Against the Machine-y kind of band. But, you know, this was like 96. To, I mean, I started like 94, but like 94 to 98. And then about we, you know, did like a weekend tour with System of a Down and Incubus and like open for like Busta Rhymes and all the stuff. So like it kind of like launched me into this, like, I'm going to do music, you know? Yeah. So kind of from that initial kind of push in like high school, I had like a lot of East Coast kids or like New England kids, like the lure of California was there. So like right after I graduated, I moved out there with like one of my bandmates and moved out to San Diego. And while I was out there, met up with this kid, Caleb, that he had been playing in a band and had like sort of like a personal ad type thing where you like, you know, rip the phone number off the bottom. And it was like, hey, you know, we're looking for a drummer, you know, bands that we listen to are like great. And all these bands that I had been listening to a ton of. And so I reached out to him and connected. He was from Rhode Island. So, you know, both of us ended up moving back and we like reconnected after that. After we had both moved back to like New England, I was still up in Massachusetts, but just started playing. And he had a friend from high school, this guy, Anthony Lafradio, that played in the band Barn Burning. They're still going strong. I haven't been playing with them for a while, but they needed a drummer for a tour and just like filled in, like learned a bunch of songs within like a couple of weeks and then just went on tour and ended up playing with them. I don't remember exactly how long it was, probably like 7-8 years or something like that. But for that time, like we just toured a bunch and like, you know, booked everything. We had a couple of small labels that were on, one out of Nashville and one out of Seattle. But we were just out there just, you know, doing it. It was kind of like indie folk stuff, like Neil Young inspired. And, you know, but I remember one of the tours that we did, we were in Gainesville and we were playing at the Atlantic and Tony from No Idea was there. I didn't know it was Tony from No Idea at the time, you know, but he was just like, I do this festival. You guys should come down and do it. And, but had no idea that it was the Fest. This was, I don't remember exactly what year. It was probably like Fest 7 maybe or something like that. So
well, that's my first one. So
okay. Were you the one person at our
which band is this?
This band is Barn Burning.
Barn Burning.
Yeah. And so we went down and played Fest, and you know, anyone that's been there just kind of knows how magical that place is. I mean, I've been fortunate to play, you know, a handful of festivals, but there's something different about the Fest. And, you know, I just had a great time. And, Yeah, you know, about that same time that I was playing in Barn Burning, another one of our friends had a band called Sharks Come Cruising, and they were looking for a drummer as well. And that band is, basically it's kind of like punk rock sea shanty stuff, you know, like a lot of like call and response, like gang vocal stuff. Mark Lambert, who's the singer and guitarist of that band, he used to play in hardcore bands in like the early 90s. Like he did shows with like 7 Seconds and Sam I Am and stuff like that back in the day. And, you know, he was kind of looking at, you know, there's a lot of those, a lot of the punk guys that kind of move into like a country-ish kind of stuff. And, you know, he was looking at that type of thing, but doing country music here in New England doesn't really have that same grab, I guess. It's not it's just the same thing, but there's just a lot of that like nautical history. And he did some research with that and then kind of saw the songs, and they just translated really, like really well to the type of music that we were doing, which is just, you know, loud. We get compared a lot to like the Pogues and Flogging Molly and stuff like that. Yeah, so we, you know, toured with them, did a couple more shows. And, you know, we played the fest a couple more times, you know, like probably one of the most memorable shows I ever played. We were at the fest a couple of years after that first year with Barn Burning. And I remember looking at the schedule coming out, and we were playing at the same time as Dillinger Four, like like across the street from them. And I'm like, nobody is going to be at this show. Like, it's, you know, again, it doesn't really matter. You know, I'm just happy to be there. I'm happy to like play, but I was like, no one's going to be here. But I was like this Irish pub. Yeah. And when we like showed up, like the place was just fucking packed. And, it was probably honestly one of the few times, not that people were driving to like see us, but we were like, people came up and said like, no, we drove up from Orlando and like, you were on our short list of bands to check out. And like Cam from No Idea had us as like one of the bands to, you know, to see during fest and stuff like that. So we played the show and it was just like full. And, you know, part of what Sharks Come Cruising does is because of like the call and response stuff, Mark would make these giant cue cards, like big poster boards with like the choruses on them. And, you know, people were like tearing those down, and it was just like this crazy show. You know, people were just like really into it. It was probably like the, you know, one of the best shows I played outside of, you know, it's outside of like a hometown show. So it was just, it was great. But yeah, I mean, I did that for a bunch of years, and, you know, we put out a record, like we recorded with Daryl Rabideau, who is from Cancer Conspiracy. He had a studio here, actually with Mike Borman from Hot Rod Circuit. And so, yeah, you know, just hung out with those guys. And yeah, the record we did, we put out coincidentally with the Rocket Fuel podcast. I don't know if you've ever checked that out, but Jeff did that. Like, we actually connected with him, I think it was at Radfest. I forgot the exact story, but I think both Jeff and Mark got like parking tickets for like parking in a loading zone. We were like quoting out from a show or something like that. And just, you know, connected with that. But I don't know. I don't really know of too many other people that have like put out a record with a podcast, but that was what we did, you know? And, you know, it was cool. You know, Jeff just kind of helped us get some press with his contacts with like Punk News and some other stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, proud of that record. It's a fun record.
Yeah, it's Sharks Come Cruising are definitely a name that I was familiar with. Like, I've probably seen them on the Fest lineup like multiple times, because I've been going to Fest since Fest 7. I've not missed a year since. Okay. So I was probably at D4 while you were playing across the street at Dirty Nelly's. But
yeah, that's a place. Yeah,
and you got a good venue too. Like, Dirty Nelly's, it's always packed. Like, I feel like band I see in Dirty Nelly's, there's like just a, I don't know, people love that venue, and it
was fun. Yeah, so
that venue has like a almost like a dedicated like crowd for the most of the weekend, because I feel like anytime I've ever gone in there, it was usually a pretty full room and a lot of people who were clearly hanging out there for like most of the day. So yeah, there's something about Dirty Nelly's that just like just draws people in to hang out. Nice. But that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, we asked you to join or to record with us, I think around the time that Paul was on your show. I think that's how I found out about your show, is he told us you were on it.
Yeah.
And or he told us he was on your show. Yeah. That's and then you emailed asking about a button for the podcast, and I have yet to mail that to you. So
yeah. Yeah. I was not going to bring that up. I didn't want to publicly shame you that you have been unable to mail me a button, but
so if you've been listening to the show and have heard us talk about these buttons and have been, you know, held out on asking for one, now you know that if you do ask for one, it will never show up.
Yeah.
So we're the Interpunk of podcast
of merch podcast buttons.
Yeah.
I just hijacked the conversation about a free button to just be like, hey, you want to be on our show?
Yeah.
Hoping no,
I appreciate you asking. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, it's you doing a show specifically about the Rhode Island music scene is definitely niche, but...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's such a cool idea, especially for people in that scene who know that area well, because it's... Thinking about that, I was like, man, I wish somebody I knew would do like a North Carolina like music scene, because, you know, I'd find that massively interesting myself. So I guess every scene would probably like their a version of your show. And I even really like that you do like the bonus episodes with like sort of advice and like top fives and all that stuff. So it's a really great concept you've got going over there.
Yeah, well, thanks. Yeah, it definitely was that kind of element of trying to sort of archive these, you know, I mean, it's not like a oral history or anything like that, but just kind of having that type of thing. And it does bring up some of that nostalgia element. And I mean, honestly, I've heard of like clubs during these interviews that I didn't even know exist. And so it's just trying to kind of pull some of that stuff out. But I mean, I've been like pretty surprised at, you know, who's been listening. You know, I knew that when I was starting this, that it was going to be like pretty targeted to Rhode Island, you know, Rhode Islanders or, you know, like expat Rhode Islanders or whatever. But, you know, kind of looking at some of the podcast stats, there's been a lot more people around the world that have listened to this podcast than I would have ever imagined. So thank you. I mean, definitely listened to it. You know?
It definitely, I guess that comes from like the people you interview who, you know, they have their own following and but yeah, it's really cool. We should probably get into the format of the show. So,
sure.
So as usual, we like to take a look at the Rate Your Music charts for the year of the albums we've picked. And for this episode, we got the year 2002. Dylan, initially we were looking at it before we started recording and you said this is a weird list but also a good list. What jumps out to everybody on this first page?
I mean, number one is not a record I'm personally that interested in, but is definitely a big deal and really, really indicative of the time period. Interpol, Turn On the Bright Lights, that's a huge record. And I mean, just kind of launched so many different bands' careers. I mean, that got huge, like, I mean, The Killers and et cetera, you know, that it really all kind of stems from there. So that's a big deal. Number two, I mean, this one's not a big seller from that year, but it's definitely also a big deal in a different way, a different scene. But City of Caterpillars, self-titled, that's a personal favorite screamo record.
Yeah, it's an interesting list. Number three is McCluskey and their album McCluskey Do Dallas. And they're a band whose name, like, I knew, like, or I feel like their name has kind of popped up a lot in the last year or so as far as I don't know. I've seen people talking about them, and I didn't really know much about them other than they were like a UK band. And I listened to that album not that long ago, and I really enjoyed what I heard. It's kind of doing, I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of listed as noise rock and like post-hardcore, but I could see that band being an influence on Idols, who have been massively popular in the last year. So I see them being a pretty big influence. And I enjoyed that record listening to it, but skipping down, I'd say probably the most important record on this page, arguably, I guess, Against Me's Reinventing Axl Rose is on here. That is a humongous record.
There's quite a few big records. Me Without You's first album, Coheed and Cambria's first album, and then you've got like Hot Snakes, you've got Dillinger 4, and then, I mean, further down, like,
shit,
more signs of what's to come in the ensuing decade. You've got Norma Jean's first album. Is that the first Flogging Molly record, or is that the second?
No, it's the second one.
There's a Thrice record, Taking Back Sunday. I mean, it's
Hot Water.
It's stuff you remember from the 2000s, like, and it's not, and not all of it is necessarily the best album, but it's like maybe second best, or, you know, close to it, or at least really informative. Or influential.
Yeah, like most, like Caution by Hot Water Music isn't, I don't think it's their best album, but it's probably the most famous record, maybe. I feel like it had the biggest label push during an era where I guess punk was getting a revival.
Yeah, because that was on Epitaph, right? Maybe their second, right? On that. Yeah, so I mean, and it also, I don't know, like Hot Water, I mean, it's such a legendary band for everything that's kind of common who they've like influenced, but like some of that early Hot Water stuff was not my, how about this pun, cup of tea, you know. I don't know, but I just thought of that right now. I didn't, but I remember like being out there and be like, oh, you gotta check out this band Hot Water Music, and I was like, I don't know, man, like it was just like too, like the vocals were just too gruff for me. But like Caution and you know, this era was kind of where I like started to really like get into them, and like also just like really get into them. Like I could see like the impact that they were having, and yeah. So that's for me personally a pretty big record.
Over there on page 2, I flipped ahead a little bit, and number 41 is Piebald's "We Are the Only Friends We Have." That record is huge for me. That's like probably one of my all time favorite records. I love Piebald a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that is like when I saw that, when I flipped over, that was my driving record when I was on tour. So like we would do these overnight drives or whatever else it was, and that would be like the first one that I would always go to, because it was just, you know, enough energy and rock to it and everything like that. Like I absolutely love that record. But similar to what I was saying with Hot Water, like when I was first introduced to Piebald, that was like, I just, it didn't hit, you know. I could kind of get into them a little bit more. There was like a sort of like a retrospective, like best of double album that had like their greatest hits, quote unquote, like Grace Kelly and some other stuff. But when that record came out, you know, I played the death out of that one. So,
Yeah, like it's my favorite record. And I agree. I don't really care as much for the early, they're good records, but I definitely prefer the second half of their career the most. Which, even to the point where when we saw them, they reunited recently, and when I saw them, they didn't play much off of the All Ears, All Eyes and Accidental Gentleman. I was really disappointed because I really like those records a lot, but I guess maybe those are so piano heavy that maybe they don't want to play them live, or I don't know. They also don't seem to be their most popular if you look at the ratings compared to the earlier records. So I don't know. I may be in the minority who like those other ones better, but.
Yeah, I don't know if I really got into those other ones, but, you know, on that second page, that the Sparta record was a pretty, really, Wiretap Scar. It was like the first one after, like, the At the Drive-In split, you know? Yeah, I dug that a lot. Now, still, one of the songs on there was, like, when it came out, that guy Caleb that, you know, was talking about earlier. I don't know if you guys ever listened to Mock Orange at all, but there's a song on that Sparta record that sounds just like a Mock Orange song, and it's like the coolest thing, you know. But yeah, no, I really dug that. And it was like an interesting thing. I don't know what you guys thought, but I could totally see, like, from the split from At the Drive-In that, like, Mars Volta sounded like half of At the Drive-In and Sparta sounded like the other half of At the Drive-In. It was like this weird kind of, like,
yeah,
you know, oil and water kind of thing that was going on. But I was definitely a you know, big Sparta fan. Yeah. I guess with the Piebald and, you know, all this other stuff, just like kind of like straight ahead rock is my bag, you know. So
is Jim Ward involved in the reunited At the Drive-In at all?
I don't know.
Or did he drop out of that? Was it, let's see.
I mean, Jim.
Yeah, it says 97 to 2016. Oh, so he never really. He left in 2016. So I guess that's been 3 years too since then, but interesting. Yeah, yeah, there's definitely like he was the more melodic side of the group, whereas Mars Volta was like the crazy aspect of the group. And I definitely prefer Sparta to the Mars Volta.
Yeah.
I'd rather have more melody than experimentation, I guess.
I don't know if you guys have any, I kind of have like this short list of bands that I had never heard of before I saw them live and was kind of like blown away by them. And At the Drive-In is probably at like the top of that list. Like they were touring with the Get Up Kids, and for some reason I had not really heard of them. You know, they were, you know, I know they had been around for a while. This was probably like 99 or something like that. So it was like when Via had just come out maybe or something like that. But I just remember seeing them and just being like absolutely blown away. Like they just are, I was a huge Get Up Kids fan, but they kind of made the Get Up Kids look like a joke after after playing, you know, at the Drive-In. So yeah. Well,
there's a reason why the Get Up Kids didn't get signed to a major label, but At the Drive-In did. So
yeah. Yeah. And I guess, yeah, with like the First Page as well, like Glassjaw is a band like that too. I mean, kind of dug those first couple of records, or, you know, the one previous to the one that's on this list here. But yeah, I saw them open for like Deftones. And again, I had no idea who they were, but they were just nuts and just such an awesome band. I don't know how they're doing these days. I've kind of gotten older and don't get out anymore, but you know, definitely, you know, era 2002 Glassjaw was pretty rad. So yeah.
Well, unless there's something else we really want to call out off this chart, we could get into our album.
I just got to give a shout out to No Knife, that Riot for Romance record. That record just kind of, I mean, it was so different from, you know, Fire in the City, but again, with my just like straight ahead rock stuff, I really just love what they did. I mean, they like re-recorded some of the songs that were on like some, you know, harder to get splits and stuff like that. And yeah, I was just, when I was kind of scrolling through there, I was happy to see that on this list.
What number is that on here?
Where is it now? I just saw it. I've been scrolling through more. I'm sorry.
I see No Warning.
It might have been on. It's a little bit deeper.
Page 3, maybe. That. Yeah. It is funny because you can just kind of keep going and you're just going to see like really good record after really good record, or at least, you know, well-known bands.
It's 127.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So page 4 there.
Yeah. But
yeah,
I was just happy to see it, you know, like it was No Knife is just such a big band and, you know, my, you know, musical life that I was just to kind of see them up here, you know? So there seems like there's some pockets of people that really dig them, but they're, I guess, similar to like a band like Mock Orange, that I don't know if they necessarily got as much credit as they deserved, you know? But yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we'll jump into the album. So for this episode, we got number 208 on the album chart, and it is Hot Rod Circuit and their album Sorry About Tomorrow.
Lie awake wondering if things could have been much different. Second chance, what's become of a friendship, if you can call this one. Stayed in touch, stood behind. Well, I gave you space and you invade mine. Well, everyone makes mistakes. You let me down for the last time. You prevailed and there's nothing you can hide. And I wash my hands of you, getting all of my life.
quick before we get into our opinion. Hot Rod Circuit are an emo pop punk band, I guess you could say. Originally from Auburn, Alabama, and then later moved to New Haven, Connecticut. They formed in 1997. This is their third album and was released on Vagrant Records, who also released albums from Saves the Day, Alkaline Trio, Get Up Kids, a lot of other similar sounding bands from this time period. The personnel on this record is Andrew Jackson on vocals and guitar, Casey Prestwood on guitars, Jason Russell on bass and vocals, and Michael Poorman on drums. And the record was produced by Brian McTiernan, who was kind of a big-time producer for this genre and worked on albums from like Hot Water Music, Thrice, and Strike Anywhere. Dylan, he also produced Furtis's last album, And We Washed Our Weapons.
Oh.
So you'd find that interesting.
Yeah, that is an interesting connection.
Yeah. Well, as the guest, James, what did you think of this record?
I liked it. I still like it. I probably just like, as I've been kind of reflecting back on this, is that I saw Hot Rod Circuit a ton. Like,
Hot Rod
Circuit. Yeah, actually, one of the times that I saw them, they were opening for Reggie in the Full Effect, and they just kept on calling them Hot Dog Circus and thanking them. They're like, we'd like to thank Hot Dog Circus for opening up for us, you know? But yeah, I just saw these guys like all the time. I don't know if it was like, you know, kind of the vicinity to them, you know, or they, you know, kind of fell in with the Get Up Kids, and the Get Up Kids did like pretty well. I mean, they did well everywhere, but they seemed to do really well up here in New England. And, you know, maybe it was just with Matt, like living in Massachusetts for a while, that it was, and, you know, they put out a 7-inch from a label out of here in Providence. So they were just were always up here, and it seemed like Hot Rod Circuit was like always opening up. So like when this record came out, I had like heard these songs a lot. So it was kind of like, oh yeah, I had like already, so it was like a level of being like familiar with the songs. But no, I mean, I really like it. I think it sounds really good. I think it sounds definitely like a more pro record, you know, like kind of lining it up with other stuff. I was probably, you know, I'm probably a little bit more partial to If It's Cool With You. I think that one just is a little bit more driving and like just straight ahead, which I just have kind of always liked about Hot Rod Circuit, that they're, you know, yeah, they're writing these sort of like poppy songs, but they're like their tempos are like don't vary a whole lot, or like there's some songs where they vary greatly and it just like changes, but like they're, you know, even though they're in the typical like verse, chorus, verse, you know, scenario, they're just usually like pretty, I don't know, aggressive, especially on those like two earlier records. But no, I mean, I really like this record.
Their albums before, I guess, in the at the time, were you listening to them before this record came out? I guess you said you saw them live a bunch of times, but
yeah I saw them a bunch. I remember there was a comp that Big Wheel Wreck put out, probably like it must have been like 99 or 2000. It was like Y2K proof or something like that. It's like an orange cover, but it was just like this great comp that had, you know, some early Jimmy World on it and Lazy Kane, you know, just a probably had a piebald song and some other stuff. Like, but there was a Hot Rod Circuit song, Chinese Cuts, I think it was. It was on their first record.
Yeah, you're right.
So that was like my introduction to it. And, you know, so I kind of heard them then. I think kind of putting them up against those other bands, I was probably more into like Jimmy World and Lazy Kane. But like, you know, when If It's Cool With You came out, like Radio Song and, you know, The Power of Vitamins, like I like love that song. Anytime it comes on, it just like it gets me. So
I was listening to a little bit of that album before recording today, like that song. Yeah, Power of Vitamins is right there. Yeah, track four. Yeah, I found myself like I wasn't super familiar with their stuff prior to this album. Mm-hmm. And so I went back because I kept seeing reviews where people were saying, yeah, the old stuff's better. And like looking at the ratings, all the other stuff has higher scores. So and I was curious to see what that was that made people say that. And I listened to a little bit of this, probably about half this record. And I was like, oh, I get it. I get why people like the older stuff a little bit more than the, because it's a little bit more, you're right, his tempos are a little more unique. They kind of cited like Archers of Loaf as an influence, and I can hear that a lot, where you don't really hear that on Sorry About Tomorrow.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely interesting how they changed their sound, not so drastically, but enough that people would notice and like take note. And like, because I feel like the record we're talking about today is more iconic as far as it's more well known across the board.
Yeah.
From your average music fan or just someone in the scene in general would know.
Yeah. I mean, this is the one Hot Rod Circuit record I have heard. Mm-hmm. Like I heard their name and saw this record kind of recommended on blogs probably in 2008 or 2009 or something. And so that's probably around when I listened to it. And that was probably the last time I listened to it. so I wasn't familiar with anything else by Hot Rod Circuit. I mean, I knew they had other records and they were kind of a bigger deal. I figured they were maybe the rest of their discography was more in line with this record. But if you're hearing Archers of Loaf on their earlier stuff, maybe I need to go listen to those records.
Yeah. They cite Superchunk as well as an influence and you can hear it. It's definitely like an emo version of that. To me, this record has some real big Jimmy World vibes to it. Like it's real poppy. Mm-hmm. And like Bleed saves American the day around this time period. Yeah. Bleed American. Yeah. This album on my computer for a really long time, and I know I listened to it a few times, but I didn't have like a strong impression of it. And when I listened to it again for this episode, I was able to sing along with like the first song, and I was like, oh, that's surprising. I didn't know I knew this song as well as I did. But it's like a massive hook. Just that song is like one giant hook. The Pharmacist. There's one review on the Rate Your Music that says, this album opens with a 5.0 song and follows it up with 10 2.5 songs. And I don't think that's really fair.
Yeah, no, there's some, again, I don't know, maybe just because it's been like, you know, I've just heard it so much or, you know, I mean, accolades to just playing a ton of shows, you know? But I don't know, like, maybe not everything is great, but there's, you know, a bunch of songs on there that just like really resonate with me. And you know, like what Casey was doing, I think is pretty interesting. Like his guitar style is still kind of unique. You know, he uses it in, you know, on my view of it, in more like kind of writing hooks rather than like just playing like lead guitar. So it's a little bit of a difference with that. Or even when he was playing leads, you know, he'd like play in like unusual times, like when Andy was like singing. So he just did a bunch of like, I don't know, what I would say is interesting stuff. So I don't know. I think that it's, I wouldn't say that's fair. You know, I think that probably I personally like songs other than The Pharmacist more, you know. But.
Oh, yeah, there's songs on here I really enjoy. Dylan, so it'd been a while since you listened to it. What did you think of it when you revisited it?
I definitely appreciate it a lot more now than I did then. I really enjoyed listening to this record. It's, you know, this time period and maybe this style doesn't excite me that much. But yeah, like you said, there are interesting things going on, especially in the guitar work and in the way, you know, the way all of the melodic elements are built up and layered throughout the songs. There's, yeah, it's a little more complex than just like a chunky riff and
mm-hmm. Yeah, like here's some bar chords and
you know
and a hook.
So I would say there's enough there to revisit, and I'm definitely interested to hear more of their other stuff just based on where my tastes lie. I mean, Super Chunk and Arches of Loaf, but but there are some standout songs. I mean, The Pharmacist, I really enjoyed, mm-hmm. and it is it's the right song to start the album with. Mm-hmm. Knees really stood out to me, and it ends really strongly too. The Night They Blew Up the Moon was a great closer. So mm-hmm. There are definitely high moments throughout, and there are moments that kind of blur together. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think the first half of this record is like an A record, like almost like an A+. But it's definitely like an A, a solid A. And then like the second half of the album, it kind of dipped off a little bit for me, where it some of the songs start to run together a little mm-hmm. bit. But I really think like the first like six tracks are incredibly strong, which I was surprised by, because they'd always blended together with a lot of other bands in my head around the same time period, and some of those other bands, their records were a little bit more in my rotation, so they didn't sound unique enough, I guess, for them to become a regular part of my listening habits. But now since I don't listen to those records nearly as much as I used to, just because I've heard them a million times, these stood out to me more, maybe. I'm not sure. But
I mean, I enjoyed this more than like the later, you know, the Get Up Kids stuff past Something to Write Home About, or, you know, the later Saves the Day records. I like this more than really most of their contemporaries at that time, what they were doing. So I think that says something. And I think that it's not just having fresh ears, because it's like those Saves the Day records and Get Up Kids records. And like, I haven't listened to those that often, you know, so it's not like I'm tired of those songs and these are just fresher. Like there's, you know, there's definitely something to this album that makes it probably a higher watermark for emo pop punk of the early 2000s. Then I get why people recommend this one, and I get why this one was recommended to me so much, especially at the time period when I heard it, because there was a lot of like emo-ish pop punk. I mean, it had gone into its heights of like mainstream Fall Out Boy, you know, that whole arc, and it was kind of coming back down, and all of those people were mm-hmm. saying like, oh, you know, you should go back and listen to Saves the Day and Get Up Kids and Hot Rod Circuit, and like that's what influenced those bands, and then this stuff kind of re-influenced a lot of bands going forward. I mean, I think this lines up really mm-hmm. nicely with a lot of bands that play Fest now.
Yeah. Yeah, I had actually forgotten that I'd seen Hot Rod Circuit. I saw them at Crazy Fest the one year that they brought back Crazy Fest. I think it was 2011. You know, they'd gone like years without doing it. And like it was their first show back after like years of not playing. And then they started playing more shows after that. And I remember they like played in like the middle of the day, probably on like Sunday. They were outside. And my thinking then was, this is pretty good, but I'm real tired. So
yeah.
I think me and my friends, we went and sat down while they played. And we were like, hey, this is good. And then, but, you know, not day three, middle of the afternoon good, you know.
Like. Yeah, one thing that is kind of interesting to me is, like, looking at all their records. Like, when I think of the lineup of this band, I think of, like, Mike Portman. But he, from what I know, is only on this record. Even like with these like reunion shows, like he's the drummer at that period, but I don't think he plays on a different Hot Rod record. I think after this one, Dan from Lazy Kane came in and did the next couple. You know, it's just kind of like an interesting thing because yeah, this kind of just holds up as like this is the like marquee Hot Rod record, and that lineup is Hot Rod, you know, is Jay and Casey and mm-hmm. Mike and Andy, you know? So yeah, I don't know. And yeah, Mike's just super, like super solid drummer on this, you know, and yeah, just, you know, I just wanted to kind of echo what you're saying, you know, like that, definitely the first half of this, you know, the guitar like intro to At Nature's Mercy is just, like, I think you could, you know, if you're doing like name that tune, you know, I think for like, you know, emo guys, you could play just like 2 seconds of that. And, you know, most people would probably be able to get that. And I don't know how many other things kind of stand out that have that like recognizability. Is that, if that's a word, like recognition, probably yeah. A better word is probably the correct word for that recognition. At least for me, again, you know, I'm trying to like kind of take a step back. But, you know, that particular just, you know, I don't even know what it is. I mean, it's like a couple of seconds of just like a muted kind of, it's not muted, but just like kind of like single note guitar riff, you know, and before the drums kick in. And it's, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't able to make it to some of their reunion shows. Like they were doing mm-hmm. some of the stuff with Saves the Day. And then they did a couple of one-offs. Like they, you know, they played like a Monday night in Boston and I wasn't able to make it, but, you know, watched some of the video of it and it was cool. I mean, it brought me back and it was cool to watch everyone. You know, like when they started playing The Pharmacist, like Andy stopped singing and the crowd just sang it. And, you know, when that guitar part and that, you know, I was just talking about kicked in, like it was just cool to see the response. And, you know, Safely is a, you know, personal favorite of mine, but yeah, I mean, I, you know, really dig this record, and it's, you know, glad that we're kind of talk about this a little bit more deeply, because again, it's always been something that I've like had there, and you know, it is an interesting thing just because they are always, at least from my, you know, crew of friends and stuff like that, they're always grouped together with other Vagrant bands or the Get Up Kids because they just toured together. But you know, they did have their own sound, and you know, even though they did kind of deviate a little bit on their, you know, future records, like the last two, they and you know, my opinion, they still kind of held enough of it together just to kind of still be Hot Rod Circuit, where there's, you know, a long list of bands, at least for me, that go way off, you know, Get Up Kids included, where just like I love these, you know, like absolutely love these records, like obsessed with these records. And then what you're doing later on is, you know, can almost be offensive with what you're kind of putting out. I'm just putting it under that name, you know, but yeah. So, yeah, I'll stop talking about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's very much a thing that, happens. I feel like it happened a lot more with bands around this time period too, because like, Something to Write Home About, Get Up Kids is like my favorite. And then like the two after are good. But then like when they came back, they just don't do anything for me at all. And I absolutely hated. What record was that?
Yeah.
Like, not the last one, but the one before.
I don't even.
It's got like a collage photo cover.
I
don't know.
Yeah, that was the one that I was thinking in my head where I was like, what the hell is this? Yeah. Like, I mean, I guess it's also just because, I mean, not that it's easy to write these songs, but they're also not, you know, King Crimson or something like that, or Journey, where they have to, it's like, you know, as a fan, like, all you need to do is kind of just write like a poppy, you know, three chord song, mm-hmm. you know, like, honestly, something to write home about. Like, you don't have to make that exact same record, but you can do something similar. I mean, honestly, there's like a bunch of like New Amsterdam records that Matt put out that were way better than Get Up Kid records, in my opinion, you know? So it's not like he can't write those
songs.
Or
even just like his solo. Yeah. Solo Matt Pryor stuff is even better than those last couple Get Up Kids. Yeah, it's funny.
But
like, another band I think of that I do that with is Motion City Soundtrack. Like, their album Commit This to Memory. It's like one of my favorite records ever. I do not care about anything that came out after that. Yeah. Looking at Rate Your Music, it's really strange. So this album has a 3.04, which isn't really great. For reference, the album before, if it's cool with you, has a 3.30, and the record after has a I don't know if that is Been There Smoke That an actual record, or is that a compilation?
That's a compilation. Yeah,
the next one is like,
yeah, so the reality's coming through. Yeah, that one's got a 2.69, so this one is kind of like in the middle as far as what people like from them. But it's weird because it's the most well-known record. And I would have expected it to have a higher score almost based on that. But I guess there's enough old school fans that are rating it on a curve, maybe, and it's bringing the score down.
I mean,
or there's, because it is like,
I think it's the, like the stuff they did on Triple Crown was like the stuff that like is to me just more raw and just kind of has that. Like, I mean, it has that like 90s emo feel that just kind of, you know, just kind of cut through me personally and what I connect with. But, you know, how it's so recognizable is probably just, I mean, this record came out when Vagrant, like at that time, Vagrant was huge. At least to me, you know, like any band that was on that label, you know, was, you know, someone that I was paying attention to. And, you know, they had like, it must have been the Vagrant American tour was going on, and it just seemed like there was just a lot of buzz around this. So I would, you know, say that just in general, more people have probably heard this record. But, you know, I don't know if that, you know, totally calculates to it being better than some of the other stuff, but just, you know, how it's just being so connected as, like, I guess what I was saying, that like this, the people that are on this record is Hot Rod Circuit, was probably just because like every promo photo that I saw was that band, and you know, every you know, news article was that, and you know, and just these songs were, you know, Radiation Suit was like played just a ton, it was on comps and was just, you know, everywhere, you know. So I don't know, that's just kind of my feeling, that it was just like this record was pushed a bunch. And then, you know, I still think that the next record was, I think, on Vagrant, and then they went to Immortal, which I guess is kind of weird. Not weird is probably the wrong word, but I just unexpected. And you know,
yeah, I'm not sure what else Immortal did.
Immortal put out Far. They put out like a couple of Far records. Okay. So like Tin Cans and Water and Solutions, which is, you know, a huge record to me. And they put out, they put out Korn, and they put out,
I'm looking at that now.
Well, they put out Incubus. Yeah, they put out Incubus. So, you know, I guess it's also, if you're putting them in that same kind of category, it's kind of odd, but it's also just like, I don't know. I don't remember the year that record came out, but it didn't really seem like they had been doing a ton prior to it. And then it was like, a lot of people don't tend to move to a major label on like their fifth record. You know, it seems like a lot of people like be like, oh, maybe I'm just going to go back to, I mean, even what, you know, some of the bands are doing now, like they were on these labels, but now they're going to like Polyvinyl, they're going to, you know, something else like that, that, you know, some like really like mm-hmm. well known, but like not, you know, at that same, same level as a major, but yeah, you know, the reality record is, you know, I agree with that rating there, that it was all right. There's maybe like a couple songs that are on there. Which again is weird. Cause I mean, I don't know if you guys listen to Lazy Kane or anything like that, but like that's everything that they've ever done is amazing in my book. So like adding him in, adding Dan in, just a little bit, I don't know. I thought it could connect a little bit more, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I guess I can't get into all these songwriters' heads and what they're thinking, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, plus that was like 10 years into their career at that point. So, you know, yeah. You know, you want to try different things the longer you're around, and yeah, you never know what motivates a band to try the things they do.
Yeah. I mean, I know Casey plays in like a straight up, and has for a long time, I believe, like played in just like a straight up country band. And, you know, at that time he was starting to learn lap steel mm-hmm. and stuff like that. So, you know, there's some of that on the reality record. So they're trying to bring some of that stuff into it. And, you know, I don't want to say it like didn't work, but, you know, it didn't totally land for me. But there's definitely way worse albums out there than that. So,
well, before we get into our EP, let's give this album a rating. So normally, I don't know if I explained this in an earlier email, we rate on a scale of 0 to 5, and you can like use any of the quarter points between, so like a 3.25 mm-hmm. or so, you know, 4.75 along those lines. So I'll go first, and I'll give this record a 4.0. I really, really enjoyed this record, and I bet this is one of those ones that if I had spent time with it at a younger age, this would be like one of my favorites of the genre. I enjoyed almost every song on here, and the catchiness was part of why I liked it so much, and the good guitar tones mm-hmm. and the vocal line, like just everything worked for me. So yeah, I was really into it. Dylan, what would you give this one?
I'd give it about a 3.75. like it's close to being a record that I would come back to, but I just feel like it gets a little mushy, and like I mean that in like there's just nothing firm. Not like mushy as in romantic. but like there's a lot of like melodic structure, but there are definitely more songs. I don't know, probably about half the record is just kind of melodic, but not a hook, not really memorable, at least to me. And so I think that's kind of what holds it back from being something I'm going to revisit. But yeah, I definitely reevaluated the band. I had definitely a different opinion of them going into this episode. I had lower expectations, so they did that much for me.
All right, James, what do you think of it?
I think I would go probably like 4.25. You know, it's a record that really, you know, holds a kind of special place. And, you know, probably it just, I think a couple of those other earlier records, you know, might edge it out just a little bit. But no, I mean, when I hear it, you know, it brings me back. It, you know, I think that the songwriting is really well done. I think that just, you know, what they just overall what they did. I think, you know, everything that I kind of look for in a record is here. So I love this record. I'm, you know, been fortunate to get to check them out a bunch of times. And yeah, and that, you know, that's removing the fact that I got to hang out with Mike. So I'm not speaking from that point of view or anything like that, or, you know, get to hang out with Jay and New Haven and stuff like that. But just like getting to like, you know, with the record, I think they did a real good job. And I think it was, last thing I'll say about it, I just remember kind of like hearing that this wasn't like the easiest record to make, you know, like that it, you know, they had done these other ones and they were more of just your typical, like, younger bands, like going into the studio, trying to blast stuff out. And, you know, they recorded this, I think 9/11 happened while they were recording this. So just all of the, like, and they were outside of DC. So just all of the emotion that kind of comes from that. And, you know, but they had just like, you know, more time in the studio and just a lot of other stuff. And I just think that they did a good job of like stepping up to it, you know, like that, that, you know, next step up from, you know, a well-known label, but being on this bigger national stage. I think they just did a really good job and kind of delivered on that. And you can still see that, you know, like just within the last month, you know, they're playing these songs and people are still singing along and, or you haven't, you know, heard the song in a while and you're still singing along, you know, so,
yeah,
you know, good job guys, you know?
All right. Let's move into our EP. So on the Rate Your Music charts, we got number 77 on the EP list, and it is As Friends Rust and their EP, A Young Trophy Band in the Parlance of Our Times.
What happened to the good old days? I don't know. You would know if I know, 'cause I'd say so. I've been living in them since 1989,000. Come on! What happened to the good old days? She said, you would know if I know, 'cause I'd say so. I've been living in them since forever. Turned our dreams into dogmas to float, sadly made to move forever above us in this piss-poor parade. And as the shadows stretch and snuff out the flame, blurs the line between our goals and our end, which is off, well, way off. What happened to the good old days? I don't know, you would know if I know.
Basics out of the way. As Friends Rust are, because they're active again, from Gainesville, Florida, and they formed in 1998. This is their final release to date, as far as new material. It was released on Equal Vision Records and Defiance Records. Defiance was a German label that handled the European distro. And Equal Vision, much like Vagrant, was one of the biggest like emo post-hardcore labels in the early 2000s. So the personnel on this record is Damian Moyle on vocals, Chris Beckham on guitar, Joseph Simmons on guitar, and Thomas Rankine on bass, and Zach Swain on drums. Joe, Chris, and Thomas all played in Crucible, who was a No Idea like thrash band. Damian has solo music under the name Damian Dunn, and he was also briefly the vocalist for Shai Hulud and Morning Again, which was very surprising to me. Yeah, Damian would wind up leaving the band right after recording this EP, and they attempted to play As Friends Rust with some friends filling in for vocals, and then they later found a new vocalist and changed their name to Salem. James, did you have much experience with this band before As Friends Rust? Like, or were you familiar with them?
No. I mean, I had definitely heard the name, but yeah, prior to kind of, you know, having this thrown my way, I'd never really listened to them. So yeah, you know, I mean, I tried a bunch of stuff. I would say that, you know, this EP was probably not the best introduction to them. So it's not, I mean, yeah, it's not a bad thing. Like, it's not a bad EP, I guess. You know, I've listened to it a couple times now. I guess kind of similar to you, you know, with the Hot Rod record, like the first song on this is like really catchy. You know, on this As Friends Rust EP, you know, it's really catchy. So like, you know, second or third time I put it on, I like knew it. And but yeah, there's some of the vocals on here, like the second vocals, that I'm just kind of hard to get around. It just doesn't really land for me. And then, yeah, again, you know, doing some research for this, and then like listening to like the stuff that came out on Doghouse, like, is way more my jam, you know, like that stuff is really good. Or, you know, the song Coffee Black, or, you know, saw some of that, like live videos of that. And like, that is just more of like what I'm into. So I guess that would probably just be my critique of this, is like, definitely check out As Friends With Us, but maybe listen to some other stuff prior to this. And then maybe if you're like a super huge fan, this might just be some new music for you. But it, you know, it just also to me sounds a little bit different, kind of like with our conversation. Like, I don't know how familiar you guys are with them, but I could see someone that's like a diehard As Friends With Us fan to just be like, what is this, you know? Yeah.
I'm gonna be red, white, and blue than you. I'm gonna be the brown and the blue than you. Most off-bangalist you ever knew. I'm the most Americanist. I'm gonna be red, white, and blue than you. I'm gonna be the brown and the blue than you. Most off-bangalist you ever knew. I'm the most Americanist. Americanist.
When will I become afraid? Get to your only play in these darkened days.
I'm gonna be red, white, and blue than you. I'm gonna be the brown and the blue than you. Most off-bangalist you ever knew. I'm the most Americanist. I'm gonna be red, white, and blue than you. I'm gonna be the brown and the blue than you. Most off-bangalist you ever knew.
The most Americanist. Yeah, this was like, I had a general idea of what As Friends With Us sounds like. They're not a band that I've listened to very much, but yeah, I wasn't expecting this record to be what it was.
What is it?
Is it nu metal? Is it wrong to call this nu metal?
It's not nu metal. Like, there's definitely...
There are songs that get very close. Yeah,
especially Americanist.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
that like, that's strange.
Yeah,
there's at least a few points where there's what I would call rapping, not just on that second song, and it kind of comes up throughout the record. There are some cool grooves though. But most of it are like riffs or drum parts that would be better if it were just a full-on hardcore song. And I feel like they were trying to make this more of like a radio version of hardcore.
Yeah. So like As Friends With Us are a weird band in general. I wasn't familiar with them until our friend of the show, Grant McCracken, he introduced them to me a long time ago at this point. I don't know if I would have found them necessarily on my own. They're a strange band though. So they're definitely a hardcore band, but they have a lot of melodic elements. So there's that punk edge to them. But then like on this EP, there are strange, like alternative rock, nu metal style vocals as well.
It's like how Boy Sets Fire.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was exactly kind of who I thought of. Yeah. Boy Sets Fire was the band that I thought of while I was listening to this. I was like, yeah, this is strange. It's like a bunch of different styles all kind of smashed together. And
well, it's the right time period. Like, because think about, Norma Jean, before they were Norma Jean, they were Ludacris, and they had a turntable in the band at one point, you know, and like there was, I don't know, like it, this is right before hardcore and metalcore had that really big mainstream crossover. And so, yeah, this sounds a lot like, and they were just kind of riding the wave of what was popular at the time. And then that immediately cut off, like right after this, like right after 2002.
Yeah.
It's just no more new metal. It's like all emo, scream out.
All that being said, I did kind of enjoy this EP a lot. I was familiar with it. The first track, More Than Just Music, it's easily one of their best songs. Like out of their entire discography, it's one of their best songs. It's got a killer chorus that, you know, gets repeated like three or four times in the song. So you will learn it very quickly. But I even kind of liked the cheesiness of the most Americanist, you know, definitely rapping. I guess that's what that is. And that's a strange song too, because that's like a 9/11 song. And I didn't think about like both of these records being recorded around that time period. And when we did 2002 in the past, we talked about the My Chemical Romance record from this year. Mm-hmm. And they also referenced 9/11 when they were talking about recording their record. So it's strange how punk and emo and hardcore and all that stuff reacted to 9/11, which later punk would just like go into attack mode on Bush because of the Iraq War.
Yeah.
So I don't think like punk and hardcore
would change their
how
record
to tackle
name, you know, so
the subject of 9/11. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
POD got massively popular with.
Yeah, they did. Youth of the Nation was a huge hit, even though it was more about school shootings. But
yeah.
The timing was just right.
how many records did they do with them?
To me, it was even weird that they were on Equalvision.
This is it. Oh, okay.
It's almost like this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a bunch of stuff on Good Life Recordings and then a bunch of stuff on Doghouse. And this is the first thing they did on Equalvision, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Doghouse bands would go on and do Vagrant and Equalvision, you know, records. And I'm assuming it's because they're like, all right, we got big plans for this band. And then lead singer quits the band. So, and then that just killed the band.
Yeah. He Damian Moyle, he's the only member of the band that has a Wikipedia page, actually. And it says that he has contributed to over 15 bands.
Yeah. He's in a lot of bands. He was in Culture, Morning Again, and Shai Hulud. But he's like on like the first two Shai Hulud demos as the vocalist. And he's in like the first couple Morning Again EPs. Yeah, he's been in a bunch of bands. He's a solo musician on his own too, which I think his solo music is more nu metal alternative rock. So I definitely think that direction was him. But then they did a split with Discount at some point. So it's like, what is this band?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and he was in this band for most of the time. Like,
yeah.
So it's weird. He like did all these other little things, but he actually stuck with this one for a really long time.
Yeah. From what I understood, the band they weren't getting along with him at the end. And that's why they broke up. I don't really know what's going on there, like what went on there, but it was one of those things where it's weird because he is the one sole member from 96 to 2002. But then like the guitarist, Joseph Simmons, he comes back for the reunion in 2008 and 2015, but he was also the one who was in the band prior to the year 2000. So he's probably the one who gets along with them the most, and maybe just those other guys are like, we don't want to do this. I don't know, it's all speculation at this point, but it is interesting.
Your secret is safe with everybody. Your secret is safe with everybody.
You have to say that listening to some of their stuff, they do sound like a band from Gainesville, which is kind of an incredible thing to think of like just how they're like how well defined that kind of is. You know, I mean, obviously it can kind of vary, but like there's just that sound from there. You know, that was one of the takeaways for me is that they fit in with that whole scene.
Yeah, like I definitely, if you were like, think of a hardcore band, but from Gainesville, this is what I would think of. Which is funny, because I don't know if I can even like put into words what it is exactly that makes it a Gainesville thing. But it's almost, you can just tell. I don't know how, but you just can. Yeah, there's a little bit like a little bit of an Avail vibe to them, especially the earlier material, like the full length.
Yeah.
So I guess that kind of, even though Avail's a Richmond band, they had similarities to a lot of the Gainesville bands. So, yeah, it is strange how you can tell. Well, looking at the Rate Your Music score, they gave it a 3.5. It has a 3.56. So it's one of their highest rated releases.
Yeah, I if you look at the rating distribution too, a majority of the scores are 4 stars. Like it kind of picks up right around 3 stars, and like the 3 to 4 range is where most people rate it. But there's even still a handful of people that give it a 5-star rating, and that's a little surprising. But
yeah, and even looking at like the amount of ratings, they all roughly have the same amount of ratings, like 56 ratings for this one, and the 99 EP has the same number, and even the LP only has 85. So I'm assuming that it's just because they're not the most well-known band, that if you're gonna be the type to go rate one of their albums, you're gonna pretty much rate all of them. But yeah, it is strange. People like this record, even though it's very different, I think, from the earlier stuff. But well, unless anyone has any other pressing thoughts, we can give this one a rating. I'll go first.
Sure.
Okay. I'll give it a 3.5. I do think the first track is excellent. It's like one of the best songs in their discography. And I also really enjoyed the song Born with a Silver Spoon Up Your Ass. they're one of those kind of bands too. Because the first track's called More Than Just Music, It's a Hairstyle. You know, they have other songs and other albums that have like really long titles too. So they're one of those trying to make like a jokey, funny name track. But the thing that holds it back is The Most Americanist being like a nu metal song. Even hear that a little bit on Temporary Living. And then they have that weird acoustic piano song that's like a minute long or lit.
Yeah. And then there's like a bonus track thing to be right. You know, it's kind of weird.
Yeah. I mean, there are things I liked, but there were things I didn't like too. Dylan, what would you give it?
I'm going to give it more of a 2.5. I see what they were doing. I don't like very much of what they were doing. And it's not even, I guess, not entirely because like they were bad at it. Like, it's just not something that I like. But there are moments that I did really like. But I don't think that there's any individual song that I enjoyed from beginning to end. Like, it's mostly just like parts here and there. So not for me.
All right, James, what do you think?
I think I would probably give it a 3. somewhere around there, I guess. That first song, I could definitely listen to that more, but I don't know if I would really listen to this again. Learning more about some of their other stuff, I think I would definitely go to their earlier stuff. They're like what they put out on Doghouse. And so I'd say that if I'm going to listen to this band, I'm probably going to listen to that. And nothing really like drew me in other than that first song. So, what they did, they executed it. But I just don't know if it really works for me. And even kind of, with that new metal-ish kind of sound, it like there are just a lot of other bands that kind of take that sound and do it better than this. You know, it seemed like it was kind of this weird middle ground that they were like really good musicians and can do what they're doing, but just it wasn't fully. There's like an endless list of like those new metal-ish kind of bands, you know, even kind of what we were just talking about, like POD or whatever, Seven Dust and all this kind of stuff that, you know, whether you like them or not, you know, that it was a little bit better than what As Friends Russ was doing on this. So, first song is good. If that was like on a 7-inch, I would buy it. Other than that, it's just, I'm just going back to their back catalog of stuff and, just the more aggressive and, you know, dirtier sounding stuff, you know? So,
yeah, first thing I would recommend is their full length album. One WON. I that's what I would tell someone to try first with this band. I wouldn't give them this one. This one's, yeah, you're right. It's like, oh yeah, if you like them, then here's some bonus stuff you might like. We'll try, but start with the LP. That's probably the best thing. All right. Well, next week we are talking about the year 1982, and we got number 18 on the album charts, and it is Crass and their album Christ the Album. And our EP is number 94, and it is the Durruti Column, and their EP Do Angel Triangles. I don't know. I can't speak French. James, tell us where everybody can follow you online, get your podcast, all that kind of good
sure.
stuff.
Sure. Well, the podcast is, again, where the living room used to be. You can find it pretty much anywhere podcasts are, you know, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. You know, check me out on Instagram at livingroomutb. Same thing with Facebook. So yeah, I mean, with this, like, in addition to the podcast, I try to meet up with the, you know, person I'm talking to and, you know, take, and share photos of like old flyers or just memorabilia. You know, I did an interview with Will Schaff, who is pretty famous for album artwork for bands like Aukerville River and Godspeed You Black Emperor and just a ton of bands. But like went to his studio. So there's a bunch of photos online of his studio called Fort Foreclosure. So you can kind of see like a little bit of like behind the scenes stuff. So, you know, if you follow me there, and yeah, you know, please, check it out.
Awesome. Thanks so much for doing the show with us. We had some weird technical difficulties up top, but hopefully we can get this all edited out and it'll be perfectly seamless and no one will even know. But...
until you just told them.
Yeah, I gave it up. I'm truthful to a fault.
I can't wait for my pen to come in.
Continue to follow us. Oh, shit. Let me... you're not the only one I was supposed to mail one to. I'll say that.
You're just digging deeper. Just exposing more of your sins.
Well, I just hate going to the post office. I guess I shouldn't tell people to email me to ask for pins. Continue to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're at Punk Lotto Pod. We have a website. It's punklottopod.simplecast.fm. And our email address, if you want a pin that I'll never mail you, is punklottopod@gmail.com. Please give us a rating on any service that you can give us one on, because it always helps for people to find us. But yeah, that'll do it for this week.
Thanks so much, Dan, guys. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks. Now stop it, Dylan.
That's right. The year is 1965, and you and I are undercover detectives on the Hot Rod Circuit. Now let's burn rubber, baby! Speedway Squad, in color.
Wait, that was all a dream. Oh, hey, then maybe I haven't become a hideous drunken wreck. Oh.